We're talking about David Foster Wallace on the 10th anniversary of his suicide this week. And even this many years later, it's hard to underestimate what a popular and controversial writer he still is. There's even an entire field of David Foster Wallace studies. One of its leaders is Claire Hayes Brady. She teaches at the University College of Dublin, which is where Steve Paulson reached her, and a special guest.
Hi, I hear a baby there.
You do. Yes, he's gurgling away here. I'm hoping he'll go to sleep.
How old is he?
He's 4 weeks and 2 days.
Wow.
You know, he's very keen to get as much media exposure as early as possible. Hey, now, I don't need to hear that.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Not at all. I wouldn't miss it.
Good. Let's go ahead and start then. Just in the last couple of years, it seems like something new has happened in the way people are talking about David Foster Wallace. I mean, he's no longer simply called a literary genius. There's a lot of criticism now, especially about his treatment of women. What has changed?
I think there's a couple of different things going on there. Initially, because he was really a writer at the height of his powers and when he died, the initial phase after his death was really celebratory. It was Wallace is a writer as important as Wolfe, as Joyce, as Austen, and we should have a field devoted to him.
There were Wallace studies. I mean, there's a whole body of literature just devoted to this one writer, David Foster Wallace.
Yeah. I mean, I think the phrase Wallace studies, to the best of my knowledge, was first used in 2009. Over time, it has become a very vibrant field. But you can't simply spend a critical lifetime talking about how great someone is.
So there was this period of adulation, especially in the immediate years after his death. And then something more recently has changed. And I guess I'm wondering how much of this is a product of the Me Too movement.
In some ways, I think it's a coincidence of timing, because there was an inevitable critical backlash that I think was really important and has led to a real vibrancy in Wallace studies in general. And that's very much coincided with, I think, the Me Too movement. And in Wallace's case, again, the timing is interesting because, as you may be aware, a couple of months ago, the writer Mary Carr tweeted about Wallace's treatment of her in their relationship.
Yeah. And we should sort of give a little background about Mary Carr, who is a very distinguished writer in her, in her own right, was once romantically involved with Wallace and came out with this tweet a few months ago saying, "The violence David Foster Wallace inflicted on me as a single mom was ignored by his biographer and The New Yorker as alleged, despite my having letters in his hand." And this was a reference to the biographer D.T. Max, who did mention that Wallace threw a coffee table and tried to push her from a moving car. And then Mary Carr went on to say, "He tried to buy a gun, kicked me, climbed up the side of my house at night, followed my son, age 5, home from school, had to change my number twice. He still got it. Months and months it went on. And apparently he even offered to buy a gun to kill her husband."
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a litany of really, really seriously inappropriate and dangerous behavior. It's really, really terrible. Now, I would take some issue with Carr's use of the term ignored, because it is included in the biography. Not all of it, not in as much detail. But what I think is interesting is that what happened was not that it was ignored, but that it was folded into this myth of kind of a genius. You know, the behavior of a troubled genius, that it became part of the story.
And so in other words, maybe he was given a pass. Maybe this is what tormented geniuses do. They're abusive.
This is the myth of the male genius. Yeah, that's enormously troubling in its own way. You know, I think that instead of brushing it under the carpet, culturally, we tend also to sort of say, well, you know, boys will be boys or geniuses will be geniuses. And I think that Carr has been very, very brave to come out again and remind critics and remind readers that this happened and it shouldn't be forgotten. It shouldn't be ignored.
So was David Foster Wallace a misogynist?
I think that's yes, is the short answer. I think there are a couple of different questions arise when we talk about the misogyny or the racism or whatever sort of ethical question of an artist. It's an age old question. But yes, Wallace was a misogynist and much of his work deals with misogyny. I think that that's one of the things that we notice in his writing, how self-aware and sort of self-deprecating in some ways he is.
Well, and it's worth pointing out, he wrote a book called Brief Interviews with Hideous Men. You know, so, I mean, he obviously recognized toxic masculinity, undoubtedly, in himself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think investigated it as well. And he talks specifically about the misogyny in that book and using the term misogyny. So he absolutely was aware of it. He talks about feminist theory in a lot of his early work. And he was writing it at a time when gender politics and feminism were in huge transition.
Right.
You know, he was at Amherst in the 80s. You'd have to be deaf and blind and living under a rock to not sort of be aware right. of those debates.
Well, and this is maybe part of the fascination of this. I mean, Wallace writes yeah. about angry, confused, lonely men. He understood yeah. them. He was clearly one of them.
Yeah.
Which doesn't excuse his behavior because, you know, he also did some terrible things.
Sure. But I don't know that we need to excuse the behavior in order to read the work. Wallace, as an extremely talented writer and a very flawed human being, can teach us a lot about the culture that he was writing about. You know, he's a writer who wrote about contemporary culture with a really unique voice and a unique acuity, I think. There's an awful lot about the contemporary moment that it would be extremely valuable to hear his take on.
Right, because, I mean, he was very prescient about some of these issues.
Some
I mean,
things,
he,
yeah.
he kind of, he sort
I was,
of...
I was just talking about the telepewter in Infinite Jest, which more or less exactly predicted Skype. Even more than that, predicted things like Snapchat and Instagram and the kinds of filters that we use to present a face to society that resembles but isn't quite the face that we live in. He really saw that coming in astonishing detail.
Yeah.
There's a certain corner of the internet that maintains that Wallace predicted Trump as well, also in Infinite Jest, in the character of Johnny Gentle, for those of you who might be interested in chasing that one down.
So David Foster Wallace has been called the greatest writer of his generation, whose books mm-hmm. defined an era. Do you think that's true?
Yes. Yes, I do. For better or worse, I think Infinite Jest is one of those books that very much caught a zeitgeist. What makes it era-defining for me is actually the number of people who know about it but haven't read it.
Right.
And I think, you know,
it's,
I think
kinda, it's a little daunting. It's really long and complicated.
Yeah, it's huge. You can use it as a weapon. Like, it's a doorstep. It's something that's referenced very, very frequently in pop culture now. I know there was an episode of the TV crime drama Castle that has a reference to it. Hmm. It was in the Gilmore Girls, in fact. It's a real cultural touchstone and has its own signification, I think, without necessarily people having read it. And for me, that is what makes Wallace, or one of the things that makes Wallace era-defining. It's not necessarily the books themselves, although I would argue that they're also enormously important. It's that he is known beyond his readers.
Right.
And there's a kind of a myth around his writing.
And there are gender politics that play into this as
yes.
well, because there's another critique you often hear from women who are tired of having men, often their boyfriends, push
yeah.
Wallace's books on them. As New York Magazine said,
yes.
Wallace has become lit bro shorthand. And
yeah, absolutely.
Deirdre Coyle wrote an article in Electric Lit that went viral saying Wallace is on a list of books that literally all white men own.
Yeah.
That's yeah. pretty harsh.
I would not dispute that. And embarrassing as it is to admit, I was introduced to Wallace by a guy in my college class, you know, who fulfills precisely those criteria. He is a writer that is very attractive to a particular group of young, earnest, smart, white men. What I would say, though, as well, is that the community of Wallace scholarship, which has a big crossover with just Wallace fans, is very aware of that reputation, is very conscious that Wallace studies and sort of Wallace readership in general is very much seen as a boys' club, and is working very hard to mitigate that, to work against that. And there are a large number of really brilliant female scholars working on Wallace, and a number of very, very gifted scholars of color working on him as well.
Well, and then coming back to the stories that Mary Carr has told about him, about
yes.
how he hounded and chased her and
yes.
abused her and was physically violent, and that, I mean, that becomes more than just a literary thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And Wallace isn't the only writer we ask this of. How do you justify reading a writer who you know to have behaved that way?
Right.
I
mean,
that's
the huge question. To put it bluntly, should we stop reading these writers who've done horrible things?
Yeah, I think it's a valid question. It's a question we've been asking since there have been enough people together to discuss issues like this. I don't think that there's a straightforward answer to that. But I would draw a distinction between choosing as a reader and choosing as a critic. Those are two different things, I think. So as a reader, choosing not to read a writer because his behavior has disappointed or offended you is an absolutely valid reason. But one of the things that I've noticed happening is that critics and scholars have said, I'm not going to assign Wallace, I'm not going to teach Wallace. And other writers, Juno Diaz comes to mind as well, and Sherman Alexie in just kind of very recently. But the question goes back, you've got Woody Allen and Roman Polanski and, you know, Caravaggio for that matter.
Right, or Picasso in the art world.
Picasso, absolutely, yeah. So this is, you know, this is something that arises again and again. But I've noticed with Wallace in particular that this critical decision, I suppose, has been made recently and made publicly. Amy Hungerford would be the kind of the obvious example. And Hungerford talked about refusing to teach or assign Wallace anymore. I think that what happens when you do that as a critic, as a teacher particularly, I think that you polarize debate. I know young scholars, young female scholars of early career anyway, female scholars of Wallace who have been strongly criticized by other feminist scholars for studying Wallace at all. You know, you shouldn't be reading Wallace. And that seems to me to be very counterproductive. You know, as I said earlier, Wallace is a very talented writer and he is writing from and about a flawed position. And I think that reading and interrogating and genuinely challenging that work can teach us a lot about the culture that we live in, the culture that we're just sort of emerging from 10 years on. I think the world would be quite a boring place if we only read works of art by virtuous writers. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't necessarily think that reading his work forces us to condone or validate his behavior. I think that it can give us maybe some insight into a society that promulgates that kind of behavior. As I say, I don't think that we should be seeking the perfect work of art. I think we'd never read anything.
Right, yeah. Well, this is totally fascinating. Thank you.
It is.
This has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And I have to say, I've loved hearing your 4-week-old son in the background.
He's got things to say about Wallace. You know, he's got important opinions. Yeah. Yes, Eli is doing great work here. He's passed out on my shoulder.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve Paulson, talking with Claire Hayes Brady and baby Eli. Claire is the author of The Unspeakable Failures of David Foster Wallace. She teaches at the University College of Dublin.